This is session number 274, was Mitt's run for the White House, good news for Mormonism. Bob Reese is going to be, was going to be our first speaker, but he's got to run and take care of some technical problem because he's going to show some slides. So we'll take them in the order I'm introducing them, except Robert Reese will come later. But anyway, first of all, the lighting isn't good for my old eyes here, but this is remind everybody to turn off all cell phones and other devices that might make noise. And we have a couple sturdy deacons at the back that will escort you out if this happens. In the question and answer time, be sure to come up to the microphone. As one who's bought a lot of tapes, it's extremely important to get the question on the tape. I've listened to many tapes where I was really frustrated because obviously a good question had been asked, and because a good answer was given. I just wish I'd known what the question was. We will conclude on time. I've asked the people to speak 10 minutes or so, 12 minutes maximum, and we'll close the session on time because it's late in the day. And Robert Reese will be here in a minute, and he's we all know Bob quite well, I think, and he's the former assistant dean of the College of Fine Arts at UCLA. He's now director of education and humanities at the Institute of Heart Math in Boulder Creek, California. He's primarily a literary critic with specialties in American literature, poetry, the short story, literature, and film. And he's a former editor of Dialogue, I think one of the founding editors of Dialogue, if I remember right, and I remember the first issue. He's the editor or author, co-author of several books, and has produced two documentary films that have been shown on public television with both at home and abroad. We all know Paul Tinker, too. He's an attorney, now repented. Now, Paul, did you repent of being an attorney, or is it a broader repentance that we're talking about here?
I'd say it's pretty narrow.
He wants to keep that repentance narrow. Okay. He's a researcher and social critic. We all know him well, so I'm just going to go on. Let's see. Randall Paul is our next speaker, and he has his PhD from the University of Chicago and MBA from Harvard, and he's the author of Fighting About God, Why We Do It, and How we Can Do It Better, and that should be helpful to all of us. We'll fight better. And then finally, I got these a little bit mixed up here. But here's Scott Howell. Finally, Scott Howell he's been employed by IBM for more than 25 years, working in various marketing and sales leadership assignments. He completed a year at Harvard at the Harvard Executive Education Program recently. He also achieved the IBM certification to become a master deal maker. And he was taught and completed at the Wharton School of Business, the University of Pennsylvania. He served in the Utah State Senate for 3 terms, 12 years, I assume that was, 8 of which he served as a Senate Democratic leader. And just very briefly, a couple other things. He's consulted with the governments of Australia, Japan, Italy, Latvia, and China. And he served on the 2002 Salt Lake City Olympic Organizing Committee. Now, you weren't on the original committee that got kicked out, were you? One of the ones that came in with Mitt Romney and so forth and replaced it. He went to Dixie State on a football scholarship and got his degree from University of Utah in political science. So we'll speak in that order, except for Robert Reese. We'll bring him in when we get a chance. But first, I just want to say one thing real quickly. Some of you might have noticed that yesterday I had an Obama T-shirt on. But today I've got my Joseph Smith Sidney Rigdon T-shirt on because I was awakened early in the morning and it was made known to me that I should back the Smith-Rigdon ticket. Some of you have been saying today, well, they're dead. And I point out to you that in American politics, dead men can win. Just ask Senator John Ashcroft of Missouri about the 2000 election when he was beaten by a dead man. So we're hoping to revive that campaign. Robert, you got to go first now? I just finished my introduction. You've been properly introduced. I didn't pan you at all, but if you need time, we'll put you second. Okay, second. Paul, go ahead.
That's actually too bad. I was planning on going second and kind of bouncing off the humor that would come from the cartoons that Bob is going to show.
I want to talk just in some general ways about the question that has been posed for this panel, and I guess the main thing that I want to say is that, in my opinion, it's really too early to answer the basic question of what the impact of the Romney campaign has been on Mormonism. In fact, it's not only too early in a general way, but very specifically, the possibility is still out there that this could go on. There are certainly people out there pushing for Mitt Romney to be the vice presidential candidate on the McCain ticket. I would personally be surprised if that happens, but every day when I check into some news sources and so forth, there's clearly people who think it could happen, and there's clearly people who want that to happen. So maybe next year we'll have a lot more to talk about on this topic. The vice presidency is still in play. So far, it seems to me that we've learned that as a result of this particular candidacy and the interest that has come in the Mormon community, that sometimes it's problematic that we have prided ourselves for years on being a peculiar people. But in other ways, we don't want to be too peculiar. And in fact, as has been prominently stated, we're not weird. And if there's anything about this campaign, it was a consistent kind of desire to make sure that Mitt Romney was not portrayed as being weird because he was a Mormon. In a more general way, and this is kind of what I want to talk about, is the way the Romney campaign and the whole situation illustrates what I would label a trend in American politics to become much more focused on group identity as a qualification for candidacy. Membership in specific groups seems to have come to dominate a lot of our political thinking. And I want to read you just a couple of paragraphs out of an article that was in the Deseret News about 3 weeks ago, an AP article, quoting former President Bill Clinton, who was speaking to the National Governors Association and kind of talking about what had gone on in this political season. Bill Clinton noted that, on the one hand, following the early stages of the Democratic primary, the surviving candidates were an African-American man and a woman. Very unusual for American politics. Bill Clinton's wife, Hillary Rodham Clinton, battled for the Democratic nomination into June with Barack Obama, the son of a white mother and black father. But this achievement was overshadowed by a growing distance between Americans, Clinton said. And this is kind of the idea that I would like to talk about for a few minutes. Now quoting from Bill Clinton, "Underneath this apparent accommodation to our diversity, we are in fact hunkering down in communities of like-mindedness, and it affects our ability to manage differences." Then he goes on to talk about some other details that I won't bore you with here from the article, but he has statistics showing that in certain counties, a great many counties around the country, the margin of difference between candidates that used to stay below 20% in the final election, in a great many counties, even a third of the counties in the country, the margin is over 33% difference on a county-by-county basis between the presidential candidates. And so then Clinton says, "We were sorting ourselves out by choosing to live with people that we agree with." Well, even more than what he said about the two candidates on the Democratic side, if you look at the at both parties, and if you're willing to make the assumption, which I think is a plausible one, that Mitt Romney was really one of the final four in this year's contest, Obama, Clinton, McCain, and Romney. Even though Romney wasn't the very last to drop out on the Republican side, I think it's very legitimate to argue that he was the strongest opponent to McCain. So if you take those four as the finalists, out of those, and if you also accept the common Mormon formulation that Mormons are not Protestants, then out of those four, only one was a white Anglo-Saxon Protestant. That is revolutionary in American history. And we're going to continue to see the ramifications of that development. Now, what I observe in this, and what is somewhat troubling to me, is the idea that this group kind of identification that we're focusing on now primarily revolves around three things, and only these three things: race, sex, and religion. Those seem to be the hot button groups that we focus on. Maybe I am misremembering my history, but as I think of the early days of the Republic and the difference, for example, between the Federalists and the Democrats of that day, the Jeffersonians, their differences and their associations, it seems to me, were so largely about economic interests. The merchants and the shipbuilders and the people in New England, the manufacturers, they tended to identify Federalist. The plantation owners, the slaveholders, the more agrarian interests in the South and in the West tended to identify with the Democrats. Of course, women couldn't vote at all. Very few blacks, if any, could vote because most were slaves. So it is clearly a different dynamic now. In those times, you had to own property to vote. So many differences, but still this emphasis on groups and whether a member of a particular group can aspire to the highest office in the land. Now, as far as this affects Mormonism, my thinking is that Mormons in particular have had sort of an inferiority complex for a long time, that even though we're very involved in national politics, we've seldom really gotten close to the highest levels of national politics. And while I can, on the one hand, sympathize with the fact that when we have a Republican primary this year in Utah, that 90% of the vote goes to one candidate, what I'm fearing is voting in a way that sort of reinforces our own identity and our self-esteem. I want to read just fairly quickly here a statement. It's really it was from a blog and it got posted by MSNBC. This is not talking about the Romney candidacy. It's talking about the Obama candidacy and what its impact has been. But it's from a man named Jack White. But Jack White is black, and he is a former columnist with Time magazine. And he's commenting about the Obama campaign in the wake of the rather unfortunate comments that Jesse Jackson made about Obama maybe going too far or not pushing the traditional black agenda and so forth. And this man says, "But in a deeper sense, the stunningly inappropriate comments of Jackson symbolize the social, political, and psychological vertigo that all of us," he means the black community, "that all of us, and especially black Americans, are experiencing because of Obama's success. We are all, including Obama, in a place we never really thought we would be, and it has knocked us off our feet. We don't know how to act. We don't have a plan. We're searching for our equilibrium. And until we regain our footing, we can expect all sorts of bizarre behavior from people who ought to know better. Hold on to your hat." He goes on in that vein, and I won't read any more of it. But if not this year, then in a future year, we will be asking those same, and we've already done it to some extent, but we will be asking those same questions in the Mormon community, because, as we've already seen to some degree, that scrutiny that goes with high-level political candidacy it brings to the group dynamics and questions that we've not been used to answering, not been comfortable with dealing with, and we will need to become more comfortable at some point. And with that, I guess Bob is ready to go. So I'll leave that for some further commentary in the Q&A.
Okay. Bob. Good.
We're at the mercy of technology our whole lives, it seems, increasingly so. So looking for the clicker for this thing, but I've got, when all fails, go to the human one. Just before you put that up, Dan, let me just say a couple of words. Mitt Romney's candidacy for the presidency has provoked a great deal of discussion, and certainly within Mormon culture it has produced, I think, a kind of schizophrenic response, in the sense that Mormons are proud to finally have a candidate that one might consider worthy of serious consideration. You notice that I'm not... Between Joseph Smith and Mitt Romney, I'm not mentioning Orrin Hatch. Yet, on the other hand, his candidacy for the presidency has exposed some things about the church and about Mormon culture that many people are uncomfortable with, because those are things that we know how to interpret. We know what it means when we use our own language, we use our own symbolism, and we use our own very deft way of explaining who we are and why we are the way that we are. The problem, in some ways, for many Mormons is that the Mitt Romney who became a candidate for the president was one we had a difficult time recognizing and identifying with. In an article published in Harper's called Making Mitt Romney, How to Fabricate a Conservative, it talks about the kind of the trajectory of Mitt Romney's political image from the time he ran for the Senate against Kennedy in Massachusetts in 1994, and when he became a candidate for the President of the United States, or at least for the Republican, to be the Republican nominee. Brent Russell Bozell wrote, right after the debate that Romney had with Kennedy, he wrote this, and I believe in the Boston Globe, or maybe it was for the UPI, he said that Romney demonstrated very clearly that he has more in common with liberal Democrats than he does with conservatives. And what many people found difficult was that shift from what some people found Romney too liberal for them, and some Republicans did, and then suddenly it seemed as if he had moved to a very different position. And whether that position was an authentic position for Romney, and some people believe that it was, and other people doubt that, the perception was that what he was doing was for political expediency, and that he was not, in fact, revealing his true colors, but had, with his many high-paid consultants, had deliberately moved to a position that they thought was the most logical position for him to occupy in order to get the nomination. Romney's people prepared a PowerPoint presentation that they were using to train a bunch of their people that somehow the Boston Globe got a copy of. And in that, the Romney people were talking about the pluses and the minuses. And clearly one of the things that they feared at that time was his religion. How, to what extent would his Mormonness be a problem? And then concludes with Romney, there's merely been the recent espousal of positions diametrically opposed to his earlier ones, feeding the suspicion that his political shifts are more reflective of his ambition than his conviction. Now, there are people, including Randall, who know Mitt Romney quite well, who would probably argue that his position is the authentic one, but the perception, at least in the populace, was that it was not. So what I started to do was to look at the way Romney was portrayed in political cartoons. Mormons have been the subject of political cartoons for 150 years at least, and anyone who has looked at the history of political cartoons knows that one of the techniques is deliberate distortion, parody, often ridicule, sarcasm. But political cartoons, we all recognize when we see a political cartoon that reflects our own personal position that they really tell the truth ultimately. It's the others that we have some problems with. So what I've done is put together, out of the maybe 300 or so political cartoons that I found, I'm only going to show 298 of those today. No, I'm showing a few that are illustrative, and Dan, if you will hit B, and we will begin, and if I can see your computer, that's good. So this particular one is Mitt Romney as a chameleon, which again reflects that idea that whatever he had to be for whatever audience, he was willing to be that. So this is divided into several of these. And again, I want to recognize at the beginning that there is some element of unfairness and distortion in these, but I think there's also some element of truth. Next. I think this is a particularly interesting one. Some of you may have seen the Doonesbury one. Can you read that?
Can you read it for us?
Can you read it for us?
I can't read it. Dan, can you read it?
"And I'm thrilled to have on the line presidential candidate Mitt Romney. Welcome, Governor." "Thank you, Mark. First of all, I want to tell you how much I admire you for the appropriate positions you have taken, you took as governor of Massachusetts. I salute you for it, sir. You're a friend of Gaze." No, I'm not. "Don't be modest, sir. You have true political courage." No, I don't, really, none."
Okay. I think most of these will be readable, but if they're not, raise your hand back there, and we can do this. Part of this was Romney claiming he was a lifelong hunter, and then here he is with Bugs Bunny and getting those varmints.
Can you read it?
Okay, read it, Dan.
"Dick Cheney and Romney."
Hold it up closer.
Hold it close to your mouth.
"Mitt is saying, man, I'm so stoked about this hunting trip. I'm a lifelong hunter. If there's one thing I know, it's how to handle a firearm."
Next one. This is just all of the back and forth between the people, but the exaggeration of each one of these positions. Go ahead, do the next one. So there's a series of these on Mitt Romney and the Mormon Church, and they run the gamut from being somewhat critical of Romney to being critical of those who are critical of Romney's Mormonism.
"I remember you said anybody but Bush."
Here's Mitt trying to emphasize his Mormonness by overemphasizing it. Come to the next one. You read that?
"Superhero Mitt Romney gets testy about being thought of as a Mormon candidate. There's more to me than my church. There's more, like my views on war. More, like my views on morals. More, like how this country needs to be run. Who is this guy? Mormon?
Go ahead.
Question, can you find a difference between these two pictures? The man says, I'm not voting for Mitt Romney because he's a Mormon. I'm voting for Mitt Romney because he's a Mormon. The man said, there is no difference.
That is the idea that Mormons would vote for him no matter what, and the other people would not vote for him no matter what. This, I think, is particularly clever of the Angel Moroni wearing a McCain pin as Joseph Smith encounters encounters Moroni in New Hampshire.
The moment Mitt Romney knew he would have to explain his Mormon faith to America, he's being questioned, looks like in a chapel. Anyway, have you ever been on the mothership?
This fits into the idea that, you know, people saw and see Mormonism as a cult. There's Mitt with the people in his closet that he has to explain. I think that's Mark Hoffman in there with Brigham Young, President Hinckley, and Joseph Smith. This is Mitt getting ready to take off in his station wagon, carrying all the baggage of the church, and you see his poor wife is left out of here. Mitt Romney using the Olympics as one of the evidences he should be, but he's having to leap over the Book of Mormon to make the case that he is a Mormon candidate, that he's a viable candidate.
President competition. He looks great. He's been working out in Salt Lake and Boston. I can't get past his Achilles.
And his Achilles heel says Mormon on it, I believe.
I am getting tired of people calling them the Mormon Olympics and the Latter-day Saint Olympics. George Romney, Michigan, 1963 to 69. Big picture.
Hold it a little closer.
Yes, but how do we know Mormons are qualified for high office?
And there are people who feel that if Mitt Romney had run closer to the political position his father was, he would be the nominee today. Who knows?
Republicans busy themselves with the question, who would Jesus endorse? What do you know about LDS church emails? Would you like to tell us more?
This is the accusation that the church was exercising an inappropriate influence in trying to foster Mitt Romney's candidacy. And so there was an attempt to say, well, what really was going on with these emails?
Question answer period. Mr. Romney, how can you guarantee that one half of America will vote for you? Marry them.
So invariably, polygamy would come up, as you might guess.
From a 60 Minutes interview. I can't imagine anything more awful than polygamy, Mitt says. The voters say, please tell me nuclear annihilation at the hands of terrorists is a close second. Mormons for Romney fundraiser. Yes, sir. By law, spouses can donate $2,100. For example, in my case, it's $14,700. Been saying to you some rubies, exes.
Well, you're about 10 minutes.
So, what's your position on polygamy? And there was three wise women. Brigham Young as Mitt Romney's campaign manager. You don't ask a decent couple like Romney's a question like that. In 60 Minutes.
This shows Mitt Romney kind of as a polygamist that is multiple wives himself, being a suitor to the GOP candidate, shows him flip-flopping, which is one of the things. Go ahead, Dan.
Pro-life Mitt, pro-choice Mitt, pro-gay Mitt, anti-gay Mitt Romney. And the GOP says, I thought you were opposed to polygamy. Hey, look, it's that fellow from Massachusetts, Mitt Mormon. Well, I hope he wants more than one wife. Gay, this may be an issue. Some candidates have admitted to extramarital affairs. Would you vote for such a candidate? Sure, people make mistakes. How about a candidate whose great-grandfather was a polygamist over 100 years ago? Great-grandfather? Over 100 years ago? That's just unacceptable. Polygamy is a travesty, Mitt Romney says. Candidates are born Jeffs. All my wives were born Jeffs. You're like, no, I'm kidding.
This is Mitt Romney's religion speech compared with Kennedy's.
Kennedy, that's not what your country can do for you. It's Mormon speech. Do whatever it takes for me to win Iowa. Campaign speech. My religion should not be an issue in this race. No candidate should have to pass a religious test. I mean, as long as they profess belief in Judeo-Christian God as often as possible and publicly attend church on a regular basis, of course.
go to the next section. Just we're running behind, so I wanted to. There, okay. Now, part of the cartoons were about this Mitt Romney trying to move to court the religious right, and the fact that much of the religious right didn't want him and rejected him.
From the bookhorn on one hand, and the right-wing Orthodox Bible of the Republican base in the other. And I hope you'll also be tolerant of the religion I recently converted to. Oh, the GOP base. Zygotes are people too. We'll stick with them. Talk radio. Gays, not so much.
Hey. I think this is a particularly... Read it, Dan.
We can't vote for Romney because of his peculiar Mormon religion, say the evangelicals. Mm-hmm. They have their snake handlers and the guy on the ground, Jesus needs a Rolex to pay the money in the bucket. Let's see. Yes, Mormons do have a lot of weird beliefs. I guess the Catholic Church. Now shut up and drink the blood of Christ. Evangelical Church of snake handlers for Jesus. But for a Mormon heavens, no, they believe all sorts of crazy stuff.
Now, Al Sharpton was critical of Romney's Mormonism, so this is kind of a satire on him.
And make a disparaging comment based on race and sex. And the newspaper says, Imus calls Rutgers basketball team nappy-headed hoes. But good, make disparaging comments based on religion. Sharpen calls Mitt Romney godless.
That shows Al Sharpton going into church in a Mormon, an uppity Mormon, there in the place where in the earlier century a black person would be. There it is. Oh, that's the one I was thinking of. Go ahead and go to the next section, Dan, because we probably need to move through these. I'm sorry there's not more time. Some of these have to do with Huckabee and Romney competing for the religious right. Just go back to that one of Mitt Romney panhandling. Go back one to that one. But one more. Mitt Romney panhandling on Temple Square.
Temple Square. Hey, Mitt, find yourself another corner, says the guy. He's running for president.
Go ahead. Okay, so this is the next to the last one. Go back one. This is the devolution of Mitt Romney, which is seen as a inversion of this. The ideal candidate, in some ways, what you had with Romney is almost a textbook candidate: handsome, articulate, smart, funny,
rich,
beautiful wife, five sons. Seemingly, I mean, if you were to, it's the kind of candidate you would read about in a novel in which somebody was trying to craft a fictional character who would be the ideal person to run for presidency. And one of the things about politics, and I think Romney's people would probably be the first to admit this, is that for all of the smart guys in the room, and they had a lot of smart guys, and they paid a lot of money to a lot of smart guys and gals to plan this thing out, and it was planned so well. I mean, it's amazing how, as you look at the history of this campaign, going back considerably in terms of the people in the field and what they were doing in South Carolina, because they knew that they had to get South Carolina because no Republican candidate had won the presidency, who hadn't won South Carolina. They had all kinds of people in the field and high-paid consultants, and they had it planned out so well. I mean, it was really very impressive. It's the kind of thing that Mitt Romney has built his reputation on in the business world, being able to analyze the opportunities, being able to look at the assets and deficit, being able to make the hard decisions, being able to plan everything out and make it go as you want it to. But then there are things that nobody can count on, and one of those was Huckabee. If it hadn't been for Huckabee, I think most people feel that Romney would have been the candidate. And, a lot of Mormons, a lot of friends of mine, who are still hoping, as Randall was talking about, that McCain will choose Romney and he will be the vice president for 4 years, and then because McCain will be too old, Romney will be the next president and he will be the president for, so we'll have another 12 years of Republican governors instead of the horrors that people are saying we might end up with. It's really interesting to look at some of the Mormon blogs about Obama. And part of what's interesting about that is that many Latter-day Saint Republicans are demonizing Obama in the same way that that people have demonized Mitt Romney. And it was really interesting to me to attend a fundraiser for Mitt Romney in Carmel earlier last year. In a house that I said that God would have lived in if he could have afforded to. But it was really interesting to me then and later to see how Mitt Romney was using the same rhetoric, especially against Hillary Clinton, that people were using against him. And I think that many Mormons are probably relieved, at least temporarily, that the church and all of the things associated with it are not getting the same kind of scrutiny and satire that Romney got before. But if he becomes vice president, it will be open season again with people who do know how to shoot. You can hit B there, Dan. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay.
Sorry for the technological glitches.
Go ahead, Adam.
I've taken the approach in my remarks to the Romney campaign to think about what it has meant for Mormonism particularly in the United States. One of my friends and mentors, Martin Marty, was corresponding with me during the campaign regarding what he tended to believe was one of the last acceptable prejudices in American society. A prejudice is something that you can talk about in a cocktail party when the person that you're disparaging is not present, and those in the room will not take you down for it, okay? And the Mormon people, I think, generally speaking, whether they're active Mormons or cultural Mormons, were somewhat surprised by the general level of acceptable criticism that was levied in snide ways about the Mormon people by talk show hosts and other people in our society during this campaign. And so I think perhaps if I'm to leave you with a couple of ideas, one of the enlightening things we have learned is that we're not the nice, intelligent, industrious, hardworking American central core that we thought we were. The public opinion polls tend to show that we are viewed as a strange and insular people who, yes, have some degree of hardworking American ethic, but that we are not the kind of people you necessarily want to live next door to if you have a choice. Certainly wouldn't go out and have a beer with us. And that is crucial to, I think, Mormon identity in coming years and how we, quote, position ourselves, unquote, in terms of our goals for influencing Zion and bringing about a Zion society that's broader than our own people, but become the leaven and the loaf of the American people and in the broader world culture that we're trying to influence before the second coming of Christ. So I see these, this is a great, Mitt has spent probably $20 million of his own treasure and a lot of ours, others, to at least give us a wake-up call as to our identity in the world generally and certainly in America, with which we can deal in whatever ways we want to deal as a people, both as a neighbor to somebody and as a public relations department at the church. I do think how this is also brought to light, this prejudice, as something that's a rather, at least among the intelligentsia with whom I from time to time talk, they let me in every once in a while, they're a little embarrassed about the fact that they've been caught. And so I do see some positive change with respect to Mormonism being less easily criticized in those cocktail parties in coming years. It's moving toward Judaism and other strange insular religions that you just can't afford to criticize so snidely and openly. And that's good for everybody. I want to talk for a minute about because I promised to only go to 8 minutes. One of the aspects of Mormonism that I was particularly surprised to find in the Pew public relations, public opinion poll, that our Mormon temple was viewed as a cult-like private place that was offensive to people and made people feel that we were strange to the point of being unfriendly, and therefore maybe something was actually going on in those temples that we were hiding. The sacred versus secret thing wasn't working in terms of American public opinion. And I believe this is one of the deepest and saddest ironies of this campaign. And yet, it's a great and wonderful revelation that ain't too late to do something about. I'm sure the brethren and the sistren are all working on this one, and maybe in the next generation we'll see some changes. But President Harold Hunter, excuse me, Howard Hunter, sorry, Harold, sorry, Howard. Howard Hunter, during his brief term, said that the temple should become the new symbol or icon of the Mormon people in the eyes, in their own eyes, and in the eyes of the world. My father's generation, he died, you know, he was born in 1902. When we went back, I was raised in New Jersey, we went back to New Jersey, the word of wisdom was for him the icon of Mormonism. When he was accepted the chairmanship of the board of a Fortune 100 company, they got up at the speech, I remember, I was a young man at the time listening, and they said, "I give you Mr. Paul, a man of integrity. I've watched him over the years, and he never touched a drop." And everybody in the room knew what that meant, because he had come up through the public relations program of the company he was working for, and drinking and smoking was very much part of the deal. So his identity of as a Mormon was tied to his integrity to holding to the word of wisdom. Well, you go to any New Age gathering, you go to any place in California, and it's passé now to be smoking and drinking, unless it's a certain kind of wine, of course. But it's hard to be a Mormon and have an icon of identity that's the word of wisdom. We've got to find something new, and our prophet Howard Hunter pointed to something there. And I would like to suggest in my next just couple of minutes that what we have learned from this campaign is that we need to make the openness of the temple, the vision of salvation for every person that has ever lived on this planet, every man, woman, child that's ever lived here, is our unique and beautiful message to the world. Couple that with what I call the pregnant doctrine that we've already announced publicly as a declaration to the world, that we are all sons and daughters, not of God, but of heavenly parents. These are the difficult doctrines that the Romney campaign, in my opinion, brought to the surface. Are we going to be evangelical Christians to get Iowa, or are we going to be wonderfully weird people who have temple rites that we show more of to people and realize that what our covenants are in the temple are very narrow as to what we will and won't reveal, and try to express our temple theologies in a way that show their vastly embracing and loving concepts for all the world, and deal as we have diplomatically with those who are like the Holocaust victims, who are offended by them, but keep pushing forward to make that temple a symbol of what we can do. Then if we all in our prayers add it to our prayers that the brethren will get us a new section of the Doctrine and Covenants to amplify what it means, this declaration to the world that we've made, what it means to have heavenly parents, then that will also blast open the concepts of that so many feminists and so many non-feminists but are concerned about women's rights all over the world. We'll find, I think, our religion has a massive effect on improving the possibilities of creating Zion. And Mitt will, in his very practical and pragmatic way, whether he's involved in politics or not, I believe in the long run, come to see that his religious base is not so important as the inspiring and beautiful doctrines that are part of his religious tradition that will influence the world. I can tell you my personal opinion is that Mitt ran for this office not to make money nor to get more power, but he really felt in his heart that he'd been given the gift of good looks, more money than he ever thought he'd make, a beautiful family that he did not earn, a religion and parentage that he did not earn, but that gave him something that he could give back to his country, he thought. And I'm convinced that he's deeply sincere, and he's also extremely pragmatic. Hence his moves around that we've seen were pragmatic attempts to get leadership of something that he thought he could do something great with once he was given the helm. Those are my comments.
Thank you.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for coming. It's always a privilege for me to be here twice in my life. About 6 years ago, I was invited to speak on Can a Mormon Be a Democrat? And it was an interesting topic at that time. But it's nice to be here with you. Going last on the panel once again proves that everything that you could say has been said, so you better think real fast on your feet, else these people are all going to leave. So before I get started, I want to recognize a great public official. Carl Swan is here with us today, and Carl was one of the great leaders up at the Utah State Legislature, a man who had a true vision. And stand up, Carl, and please help me recognizing Carl. He is a tremendous leader. He was certainly a great mentor, and he still has historic records up there. This is interesting for me to be able to speak to you about Mitt Romney. I was first introduced to Mitt when I was on the Salt Lake City Organizing Committee, and when I got a visit by an attorney one day that said, we need to ask you some questions, the FBI is right out here. And as you know, the story went on, and Dave Johnson and Tom Welch then were taken out, never indicted, and nothing ever happened. But a few weeks later, I got a call, and they said, we'd like you to interview this individual by the name of Mitt Romney. Two of my very close Democratic friends who actually helped and served with Mitt back in Boston while he was in the state presidency called me and said, this is the man. You need to support him and do whatever you can to ensure that he'll become the director, and he's the guy we need. And he got across-the-board acceptance from the organizing committee, and I found him to be very refreshing, very smart, and very centrist. Now, with regards to the question today, was or is Mormonism better off after Mitt Romney's run? I can answer it in three ways. One, no. Two, yes. And three, maybe. Now, that's about as Clinton-esque as you can get, if I can use that phrase. It's really interesting to listen to my colleagues up here on the panel, because they really touched upon all the things that I thought about. Let me talk to you first about no, why this wasn't a good thing. And I guess you could gauge it by the amount of convert baptisms that happened from the time he announced to the time that he left the race. There was no significant amount of convert baptisms that I was aware of, and I work a little bit with that missionary program. But it certainly generated a lot of dialogue. One of the things that I think was a sad commentary about Mitt, he was being interviewed by the Boston Globe, and Bob, I don't know if you ever saw this, but the reporter asked him at the end of the conversation, Governor Romney, when was the last time that man spoke to God? Now think about that question and think how you would answer that in your mind. When was the last time that God spoke to man? I can only tell you my answer from my personal being is when I went back to Washington, D.C., went to the White House with President Clinton, I would always get, you really are a Mormon Democrat? You really, really believe that stuff? And I say, I absolutely, really, really believe that stuff, and I absolutely am a Mormon Democrat. It's who I am and what I'm made of. Now, to my mind, and my wife and I have discussed this in great detail, and by the way, I have a mixed marriage. My wife's a Republican, and I'm a Democrat, so it's an interesting combination. Mitt, to my chagrin, answered it this way. He said, well, the last time I know that God spoke to man was to Moses on Mount Sinai. Now, I had the video clip of that, and I sent it up to Mary Ellen. I was going to show that, but I think for me personally that I wanted him to say, He speaks to man every day, and women. He speaks to the rabbi priest. He speaks to, and really, if his tenacity would have been what I would have wanted, he would have been able to talk about the Joseph Smith story. Now, I vetted this out with many of my colleagues who said, Scott, you just don't understand. You can't talk about Joseph Smith and 14-year-old in golden plates to the Globe Reporter. To my mind, I think you can. And I believe that we have a responsibility to stand up for what we believe. So on that aspect of it, Bob also talked about many things that discouraged me about Mitt. I knew him very well, and I can tell you, he didn't really know which end of a gun to fire. But when he came out and announced that he was an adamant hunter, and he'd gone out hunting twice, it concerned me a lot on the gun issue. Because we'd had conversations about firearms, and I support the Second Amendment. I don't want you to think anything different and so on. I just don't think you should carry guns in churches and schools and things like that. And I believe in my heart of heart, and Randall verified this, that Mitt would have gone back to the middle if he could have. Now, the irony on this, and why I answered the first question, no, the run for Mitt, for Mormonism was not good on Mitt's behalf, is because he wasn't who he could have been, or who he is, who I really believe Mitt Romney is and what he stands for. On the other hand, I think it was great that he did run, and I think he did a wonderful thing for the LDS faith. I think that he brought away with a lot, he brought to the surface a lot of the concerns about our faith, of who we are, what we stand for, and where we're going. And it's a heritage that we should be proud of. I think he did a lot of things with regards to Al Sharpton. You know, Al fired off and said these terrible things about the LDS Church. You've never heard him once say another thing derogatory about our faith since he came out and met with Elder Ballard and Elder Nelson. And so I think that there's a plethora of goodness that came out of Mitt Romney on those type of issues, and someone has to stand up for it. A lot of my LDS friends, my really, really right-wing friends, always say to me, Scott, how could you not ever just adamantly support Mitt Romney for president? And I go, well, because I don't believe this, this, and this, and this. And they go, now wait, he's a priesthood holder. Now wait, some of you are smiling. I thought about this long and hard, so I got the answer. And yes, so's Brother Harry Reid. So I think that we need to be a little bit cautious on how we project a Republican or a Democrat in the faith. There's not one priesthood holder that's significantly different than the other priesthood holder, in my opinion. I think there's good men and good women that run in both parties. The front page of my newspaper, actually, where I live in Sacramento, the day after Mitt announced, was this: FBI raids Doolittle's home. My congressman is John Doolittle, who's a strong LDS priesthood holder, and the FBI was raiding his home. This didn't square up too well with my Republican friends, who I'd been talking to them about Mitt and saying he was a good guy and so on and so forth. But that's why should religion play a part of that? Why wasn't it, if it's a Catholic, it's a Jewish, a non-believer? I just think that the media took a hold of that and Mitt stood up to him, and that's one thing that I'm very proud of. Now, the maybe comes to my answer like this. I don't think that this is over. I think that we're a long ways from determining exactly, and Bob said this, or Paul, or Randall, someone said this, and I'll agree with them 100%, really what the outcome is going to be. For me, personally, we went to a fundraiser for Mitt in Sacramento, and it wasn't as a palatial palace, but it was at a very nice country club. And Linda and I were sitting there, and the audience that was attending this event were homeschoolers. Now, I don't have a problem with homeschooling, but I will tell you that I am a true believer of public education, a significant believer. My father's here, who was a principal for 30-plus years. My mother taught kindergarten for 30-plus years, and it's just ingrained into me that the social fabrication of our church and of our world is public education. And the other person that believed that, when I sat with him on a plane from here to Boston, right next to each other, and we talked about everything, was Mitt Romney. But at this event, Mitt stood up and he talked about how great homeschooling was and how it should be receive the same treatment as public education. I knew then that he really didn't believe in, and if he did believe it, I couldn't fathom that he would switch so much on that issue. But I think Bob said it earlier that he was trying to play to the evangelical crowd. Now, what's sad about that? What's so sad is that if he would have been Mitt Romney, he would have been the nominee. John McCain, the maverick of that party, gets the nominee. He doesn't play up to that right-wing crowd. You know, he has a record on, he says he's pro-life, but when you look at it, it's a pretty heavy-duty pro-choice of where he's been. And I truly believe that if Mitt would have been Mitt, that he would be up there today, and he would have had overwhelming party support from both Democrat and Republican. So I guess in closing, I want to reiterate one thing that Paul talked about. I was at the event with President Clinton when he delivered that address at the NGA. In fact, I was two rows away from him. And the good thing about being in office when I was is that I had untethered access to the White House. And it was a great blessing. Trust me, it was a great blessing for all of us who were members of the church here in Utah at that time. And President Clinton talked about this urbanization of society and what's happening. And when he was talking about this, it almost reminded me of the close-knittedness of a community when we have a ward and we have a stake and we don't recognize each and every differing faith, opinion, color, and perspective. In this book, The Urbanization of America and the Political Ramification that President Clinton quoted, it's scary when you see the dynamics of people clustering together and building an economic and a socioeconomic system of where there's zero tolerance. Now, that is not our faith. I can tell you unequivocally that President Hinckley said to me so many times, "Scott, you will stay in that Democratic Party because we need both good men and women in both parties." And I think that that's the point of this. I think Mitt's ability to be able to represent us and represent our faith and be able to make a difference might have been slowed down a little bit by his not staying true to who he was, what he stood for, and what he could be. It's a pleasure to be here with you, and thank you very much for the invitation. Look forward to your questions.
Thank you. Well, we've got time for questions. I want to take the privilege of making the first comment or question. I have taught at a small college in Iowa for the last 40 years. I've been involved in every presidential caucus since 1972. I just want to make a couple of comments. And also, I grew up in Michigan, and I love George Romney. But Mitt Romney had this high-powered staff. Why he and others, including the Clintons, do not understand the Iowa caucuses. And he seemed to me, Mitt Romney, saw that in those early polls 2 years ago, and so Giuliani and McCain were leading, and they're both kind of moderate Republicans. And all the right-wing Republicans were down in 1, 2, 3, 4%, in very small single digits. He saw that was his opening, the religious right. That was a crazy decision. Because if you know the Iowa caucuses, somebody on the religious right is going to do very well in the Iowa caucuses. They're going to either win or come in second, and that person will become an overnight sensation in the party. It would be Huckabee, it would be Fred Thompson, it would be Brownback, but somebody would be a major person. And, of course, McCain, a year ago, was practically dead, and so he wasn't the problem. And also, this is my personal opinion, if you know Giuliani, you should know that as people get acquainted with him, he will not do well. His numbers will go down. He came to Iowa, spent a lot of money, a lot of time, wasn't getting any numbers, he left. He went to New Hampshire, spent a lot of money, a lot of time, didn't get any support, his support dwindled. So he finally made a stand in Florida, which of course was suicidal. And so it's amazing, the Clintons really screwed up Iowa too. If he'd been like his father, like I think Bob said, I think, or maybe it was Paul, his father had a big advantage
that he disagreed with the Mormon Church on a fundamental issue of civil rights. And I could go into detail on that, but I won't. But George Romney in the 60s had a fantastic record on civil rights, and so that meant people were not so critical of the church. If Mitt Romney had stayed with some of his Massachusetts policies, which were contrary to church positions, that would have reduced the kind of criticism he had. But he did not differ with the church at all. David Brooks, after Romney withdrew, said, I went to about 15 of his events, and he said, ask Mitt anything was the way they were billed. And he said, I never once saw Mitt Romney push back on a question. He always made it sound like he agreed with the questioner, no matter where they were coming from. So he should have played to his business strength, good Republican issue. He could have played as a foreign policy conservative, the other major wing of the party, strong there, firm up those bases, and then go after the religious rights vote once the field narrowed to a few candidates. Okay, I come forward for questions. Somebody, the first questioner, put the mic in the stand, and give us your name so that the tape will tell us who you are, and fire away.
I'm Mark.
Stay close.
I'm glad he didn't get the nomination because I found his positions he was taking ethically and morally rather repugnant and opportunistic. What I don't understand is, and I'd like you guys to comment on this, Mormons should be grateful he didn't get the nomination. Whether he was a great man and leader or not, whether I agree with him or not, the last thing I would want is a Mormon being the symbol of our nation and every single other country imposing our policies, seeing our policies in light of Mormonism. I mean, think about what the missionary work would be like now if George Bush had been a Mormon. It would be completely shut down.
You make the same thing. You make the same thing if Bill Clinton had been a Mormon.
If anyone, whether
that's
it's
your
claim,
it's not a question of his position.
Yeah, I mean, whether he was a good president or not, everyone would see and translate any position he took as an LDS position. Why Mormons would want that confusion all the time is beyond me. Whether it's good or bad, whether it's positive or negative, it's always going to be interpreted by at least half the countries in the world in a negative light. And it would shut down our missionary work everywhere, regardless of whatever positive things might come of it. We should be grateful for Mormon leaders as governors and senators who can influence our government in that way, where it's not symbolized or seen so on such a high level. Unfortunately, Mormons in the Bush administration pushing for lawyers who are pushing the torture doctrines and things like that influencing our government. But I'd like to know, have you ever said that to any Mormon? Think of the impact on our missionary work. When you met with other groups of Mormons who want Romney to be president, have you ever asked them, think of the implications of what this would mean to the church and how we're seeing it?
Okay, if any panelists want to speak, step to the mic.
Troublemaker just like your dad.
Doing my best.
Some people felt, I have a good friend who said he thought that the benefit of Romney being the president is that it would have forced the church to change its positions on some significant things. That he would be so visible and be in such a light that the church would in some way have to accommodate to that absolute exposure to what he was and what he stood for. And I think that most people feel he would have moved more to the middle and probably would have reflected more of the Massachusetts Romney. One of the statistics that I read when I was preparing for this that absolutely stunned me was when George Romney ran for president in 1968, 17% of the population of the populace said they would never vote for a Mormon. Last year, 17% said they would never vote for a Mormon. So in those intervening years, in all of the other social issues you might think of, who would vote for a Catholic, who would vote for a Jew, who would vote for a black, who would vote for a woman, all of those moved But who would vote for Mormon stayed the same. And that, to me, is really interesting. It is as it is, I think, we can think about what is going to happen with Obama and all of the hidden prejudice about there. My solution to the question that you just raised is rather simple. Convert Obama, and then missionary work will flourish.
I'll make a brief comment there. I really thought that was a cogent question, and you should know that Mitt himself thought about that before he ran, actually, that very question. I won't speak for him other than he ran. I will say my opinion is, and it's a sad opinion, and that is celebrity, if you're speaking about our country, celebrity itself creates status and openness. So you sacrifice for a few years the missionary work to create a social moray that is accepting of Mormonism. So in the long run, your missionary work goes up. That's the only irony that I can bring to your question there, that it's a maybe. And I think you need to think of that other side.
What was your first name? What was your name?
Mark.
That was a great question. And my perspective on that is when Mike Leavitt was elected governor here, I'm sure he is the press here. Does press come to the? Okay, good. Just keep it between us. He had a conversation with President Hinckley, and they got together and in a traditional way, just like as legislative leaders, we'd go meet with church leaders. And President Hinckley said something very interesting. He said, "You know, Mike, how about you run the state and I'll run the church? Okay, and we'll do that." Now, I'd respectfully disagree with your premise on that. And I can only talk about my own experience of being elected and running. I think that you're put in these positions to show an example of the faith. I don't think I was ever elected just because of campaigning and knocking on doors. I think there was a spiritual aspect that I could represent non-LDS and non-Christian people. And I think it was through my example and my actions that at the end, when I left office, a family came up to me and they said, "Gee, you've been elected for 3 times. We had no idea you were LDS." And I said, "Gee, I don't know if that's good or bad." They said, No, we just didn't know." He said, "I'm the stake president, but, you know, we liked who you are and what you stood for." That very afternoon, I had another family that came in and they said, "Look, we're Catholics and we just found out you're LDS. We never knew it this whole time. You've been to our house. You've done this. You've welcomed us." So I think it would have been a great thing if we do have an LDS president, one who is centric, one who follows the faith. Our faith is not wacky. I mean, it's really not at the end of the day. And I think that we should have leadership like that. And I'll go back to what President Hinckley said. If it was Mitt Romney, President Romney, I'm sure Thomas S. Monson would say, "How about you run the government and I'll run the church?" Because we can't link this up. And as much as I think about the future in Zion and all that, you know, one good thing Mitt did about running is he did away with the white horse theory and the Constitution hanging by a thread. You all know that, right? That was dispelled. It's gone. And that thing hung over my head for a lot of years, running against Orrin, you know, when I did. And people would say to me, "Oh, you know, Orrin's that guy." But anyway, that's how I'd answer it respectfully, Mark, and I think that it is a good thing. And I think that that's where we need to stand up and take courage to be who we are and what we stand for.
Mark, I would just say that I sympathize and come from the same position to a great extent as you were coming from. The big problem that I see in this whole process is the fact that the way our presidential electoral system is structured right now, it gives a heavy, heavy weight, especially in the primary process, to the evangelicals particularly in the Midwest and South. They dominate clearly in the Republican Party, but also have a heavy influence in the Democratic Party. And that's partly by accident, but it's also because the parties and the candidates have adapted to that reality and they use it. I don't know how we get out of that situation. I think Mitt was trapped to a certain extent in that dynamic.
Okay, next question, and panelists don't need to feel like you all need to answer every question. Go ahead.
I wanted to see if I can ask kind of a two-part question. Number one, I don't know if anybody knows this, but I'm curious about how much Mitt actually talked to church headquarters or any of the brethren in making a decision to run for president. And the second part is so much of President Meekly's administration was about trying to change perception of how weird the church is in the eyes of the public. And in my opinion, he did it better than anybody ever has. How much do you think church headquarters is taken aback by seemingly how little progress we've really made?
I can answer that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's when I was going to speak here, I vetted out to about 100 people a scientific survey, unscientific, and I said, ask them the question, and one of my friends wrote back to me, who's best friends with Mitt, and he said, well, for $80 million, I hope the church got something out of that. Mitt spent $80 million. Randall had said it was 20, but it really was $80
million. $80
of his own? Yeah, when he got up there, yeah. No, yeah, it's, well, but the point is that you'd think for that much money for a PR campaign, they would pay something. Yeah. Now, I had the good privilege of growing up in President Hinckley's ward. He spoke at my missionary farewell. We were best of friends. And he was a great, great, great leader. And the perspective that I have on this is that Alan Barnes, who was on the Olympic Committee, who was President Hinckley's son-in-law, passed away, and at the funeral, President Hinckley made reference to Mitt and what a great man he was and how he'd done these things, so on and so forth. I can't tell you specifically if church headquarters gave him the blessing, but I can tell you is protocol that you'd ask a friend and you'd say, your stake president, what do you think about me running? And I think if I was running for president, I'd probably want an audience with the brethren to say, what do you think? They might grant it, they might not. And probably what they'd say is, good luck. We hope good men and women in both parties run for office. Now, on the specific question about the PR, Bruce Olson, who I was with not too long ago, has flabbergasted that we haven't come farther as a people. They had done in-depth survey with very intellectual people out there, high, mighty business people, and the same perceptions were still there. It is a tragedy. So Bruce Olson, who runs the Church Public Relations, is on a new campaign trying to figure out, how do we get there? Your question was exactly what he was telling me about 2 months ago. They're flabbergasted. How do you get over this perception that we're not polygamous? How do you do that? It doesn't help when you got Warren Jeffs down there and everything going on FLDS, and I have to keep explaining to my non-married friends, I only have one wife. Trust me, I don't have others somewhere else. But that is a big challenge. How do you do that?
Change the name of the church.
I don't think that we need to change our heritage, our posterity to what we're doing, but that's probably a good idea. But that is a genuine solution, and question, and I think that people, the leaders are looking for solutions. And if you have some, this is a bright panel, maybe they have ideas, but Bruce's jaw about fell off, because they'd spent a significant amount of money on this follow-up survey to get the perception after Romney, after the Olympics and everything else. Terrible. Yep.
Okay, Nick.
I'd just like to throw a lot of different things out and have whoever wants to respond. First of all, I give Mitt Romney credit for firing Billy Bulger, who was the head of the University of Massachusetts. Nobody in either party wanted to act on that. He was the brother of Whitey Bulger, the one on 60 Minutes running from the law.
FBI.
Oh, yeah.
From the FBI, yeah. Exactly, right after Osama bin Laden number two.
Right.
And they told Mitt, don't fire him. The Irish community will hate it. The Catholics will hate it.
Mm-hmm.
They fired him, and the Irish and Catholic community said, why was he fired 2 years ago? They understand why he was.
Yeah.
But other than that, I don't have much good about Romney. I agree with Dick Morris that most politicians will have one or two flip-flops, and the public will forgive them. Mm-hmm. When you flip-flop four times in 4 years, the public will not forgive that. Tobacco, taxing tobacco for healthcare. It's flip-flop all over the map, depending on who's talking to the Chamber of Commerce, or some group in Raleigh, or a liberal group in Oregon. He's flip-flopping all over the place. Stem cell research, abortion, you know, civil marriage for gays. Mm-hmm. Everything is all over the map, which shows to me he's an opportunist.
Mm-hmm.
That's one. Number two, I don't like to think of throwing members under the bus that disagree with you. You know, when Rush Limbaugh says, oh, Harry Reid's from your church, and wants to do something, oh, Harry strays off the reservation, please don't judge us by old Harry.
Yeah.
Or, you know, Gordon Smith, a moderate Republican from Oregon. Mm-hmm. Well, he's for a tobacco tax for health care for kids. Oh, Gordon has a spree. I guess you bless old Gordon. He's wrong half the time. It's kind of offensive. Anybody uses humor to talk to people like that. Several things I wanted to mention on that. I don't think it's good for an LDS person of any faith because of the war on terror right now.
Mm-hmm.
Venezuela's getting ready to kick the missionaries out. If you put a Mormon president, I think we become a target worldwide by Bin Laden's crazies. Turkey, Malaysia, South America. So at this time, I don't think it's a good example. The other thing Dick Morris mentioned is Romney had true credibility and honesty. Why is he associated with a guy like Jim Gibbons, the governor of Nevada? There's a guy that's assaulted a cocktail waitress in a casino thing. Known drinker. I don't know how this guy calls himself LDS. He's outside of the mayor of Detroit, he's under more ethical cloud than any politician in the country today. IRS has two indictments waiting.
So you have a question.
I'll
address your first one. I don't think Mitt Romney was unfairly criticized. It's a political campaign, and he really dished it out. In the Iowa caucuses, he dished out trash to the other candidates, Huckabee, McCain, and Giuliani. I don't think he deserves any sympathy. He really was quite negative. Anybody else wants to comment? They can. Go ahead. Next question.
Couple of comments. One is, there's something to flip-flop on something he didn't. He didn't flip-flop on gay marriage because he opposed that when he ran against Kennedy. It was right there out in the open. He did change his view on abortion. That is true. He didn't flip-flop on stem cells because when he ran for governor, that wasn't an issue. But I'd like to pose a counterweight to what you're saying. And I know Randy knows this data real well. If you read Philip Jenkins' books from Penn State, the coming Christianity, the Christianity that's growing around the world, is what we Mormons would call iron rod Christianity. It is not liberal. It is not open. The National Council of Churches could very easily be called the National Council of Empty Churches or the National Council of Bankrupt Churches. Many of the congregational churches in New England wouldn't be able to stay open were it not for an endowment that goes back 100 years. They have this huge endowment, stock, wealth. They can keep their doors open. They can pay a pastor. They can pay a parsonage, keep up a parsonage, and they get 50 people on Sunday if they're lucky. So, if that is where the growth is, why do we want to just open our doors to everybody? Why don't we want to just say, this is what we stand for? If you don't like it, sorry. Those are the religions the people are flocking to. Now, we have to learn how to live together in the world. But at least Philip Jenkins is saying this, why we came certainly, can't we all just get together here? This isn't where people are getting their spiritual juices from. Am I not right?
Okay, we've got 6 minutes left. We've got more questions. Why don't we move on?
Let me respond to that.
Okay, he'd like to respond. Okay, let me respond. Make it quick, though.
I'll make it quick. This is a major issue, and that is whether growth is the primary object of our church over the next... And by the way, that's for... not for me to say, right? But if growth is the question, then I really think you're on to something. But if leavening the loaf is the question, maybe you have the same answer, but it needs to be diplomatically dished out to people so that they can hear our difference in a way that somehow, if not totally congenial, at least not so weird that they can't assimilate it into their own traditions and cultures. And so I really believe that issue is one that I'm on all the time. It's how do we show the unique restoration doctrines that are of temporal salvation for all mankind. That's not temporal, but temple. And the idea of God that is expanded to heavenly parents. How can that radically different notion be something that leavens the loaf of the world if it doesn't convert everybody?
I think church growth around the world of various denominations is kind of off topic. We've got time for two more, at least.
Just real brief. You know, Senator Howley, you kind of stole my thunder. I mean, it's a great mind thinking in the same direction as far as that Constitution comment, because I think about it, Constitution is being challenged. You know, and the Joseph Smith saying, well, you know, it takes the elders of Israel to save that. I mean, does that mean that it's going to have to take a Mormon individual to step up and do this thing? And to do their job. I just, real briefly, I went to a Christian Coalition seminar. I don't even know if they're around anymore.
They're around.
And I heard some outstanding speeches. I heard Charles Colson speak. What a remarkable man this was. I mean, he turned to ministry after he'd already been indicted in the Watergate scandal, and he had some marvelous things to say. And the thing that I felt was so remarkable about that is we didn't push doctrine, we pushed good Christian principles. And I think if the LDS people would just not be so gung-ho on pushing the Angel Moroni, the plates, and Joseph Smith, if we did that in Christian Coalition Conference, I think they would have left en masse, you see. But I don't know if Senator Howe remembers that we couldn't even show the Salt Lake Temple during the Olympics. We had to have some kind of a block so that the temple didn't show, because they said no church icons are to show during the Olympics. It was some kind of a policy there. And so what my question is it going to really have to be our responsibility to get a church member up there, you know, in this process like that?
I've been thinking about the question of are there solutions. One, I think that Randall has said something very important, that there are things that are so important about this enlightened, restored religion that the world does not know. And we should not be embarrassed or ashamed of those things. I think we can be embarrassed and ashamed about sometimes the way that they are presented and the way they're packaged. The image the world has of us is not the image we have of ourselves. And so the question about how do we change that, I think that one of the things we could do, and I'm being partly facetious on this, but a century, more than a century ago, when Utah was getting statehood, and they, in the congregations throughout the church, they said, these people are Democrats, and these people are Republicans. And the imbalance is so great now that we are perceived as being being extreme right, and for some sometimes good reason we are, when there is in fact a growing and very important liberal or moderate center that I think represents the true future of the church, and certainly represents what I think the rising generation is going to be. So if we could somehow balance those so that we could talk Scott into running for president, for example, we might begin to have some chance.
One more question.
Yes. We're about to show some of my thunder there. I agree. If Mitt had been Mitt, he would have been a lot farther along. And I think if the church would be the church, we would be a lot farther along. We've got a lot of skeletons in our closet. We ought to open the door and let them out. Admit to the problems and the mistakes that we've made. Even our prophets have made mistakes. We've got a tremendous church. We have the best church in the world. Yet, we don't take advantage of telling people who we are and what we are. If it had continued, if Mitt had continued, and even if he might be vice president, the question is going to come up with the statement of Brigham Young in the Doctrine of Discourses, when he says that unless you have three wives, you won't go to the celestial kingdom. You know, we're speaking out of both sides of our mouths, just like Romney did. We're saying one thing to impress some people and another thing to impress others. We've got to get our group together and solidify and be really what we are.
I think... I would guess Scott would agree that for a good politician should admit mistakes, and that's the way to get behind it. And so maybe that's true for a church as well. Thank you very much for coming, and thanks to the panelists for being here.